97 FM Eastside Radio.
Señor, señor, para me que le solda. Vine torero, me beso tarde. Por plaisir, il solito va. Le sir que plan, c'est jour de fête. Le sir que plan, dit autant va. Le spectateur, perdona tête. Le spectateur s'interpelle. Apostrophe, crise à page, poussée jusqu'à la foudre. Car c'est la fête du courage, c'est la fête des gens de cœur. Allons, en garde, allons. Toréador, et songe bien, oui, songe en combattant, que les noirs te regardent et que l'amour t'attend, Toréador, l'amour t'attend. À que se passe-t-il? Il de Cristalito, il de Cristalito, le taureau s'élance en balisant du taril. Il s'élance, il antipape, un cheval roule, entré dans un picaro. Ah, bravo taureau!
Well, Easter's nearly upon us. In fact, it'll be here in a few days. And I want to tell you about a special performance in the Sydney Opera House in the Concert Hall this coming Thursday, the 17th, at 7 p.m. On the programme is J.S. Bach's magnificent St. Matthew Passion, as adapted by Felix Mendelssohn, about a century after Bach actually wrote it. But it won't be performed by just anyone. The lead role of Christus is a towering role, and it requires a towering presence. And that presence is going to be provided by the towering performer, Teddy Tahu Rhodes. As you're listening to now in the background, he has a commanding baritone voice, but in addition, he has a huge charismatic stage presence as well. And he's become one of Australia's most celebrated operatic talents. He's performed around the world and has taken on more leading roles in more broad-ranging performances than nearly anybody else. He was born in Christchurch, New Zealand, but I think it's reasonable to say that we've largely owned him. And he's here with me now, Teddy Tahu Rhodes. Welcome to Eastside Radio.
Oh, hi, Alan. That's a very generous introduction. Thank you.
Well, it's not as generous as it probably needs to be. I have, in fact, taken the liberty, you might have noticed, of claiming you as an Australian. But you were born in Christchurch in New Zealand.
But, I was, yes. But my formative years.
Your Aussie connections, though, are fairly powerful, I would have thought. Do you still feel a strong affinity to New Zealand?
Look, I do. Look, my home now is my home now, and has been for a long time, is Australia. But you know, the country of your birth. And I actually was just back there recently. And there's something about stepping back onto the land or the place that you, you know, you grew up or came from. You can't, I don't think you can ever take that out of your soul or your body. There's something just very special and familiar, I think, about the place that you grew up.
Yeah, it never disappears.
It never disappears, no.
The Tahu part of your name was a bit of an add-on, really. Tell us what it means.
Oh, look, it's interesting. Well, it has a number of meanings, but from lover to man of fire, really. Yeah. It was just a name. My grandfather was given the name, or my great grandfather, and it's just a name that's been passed down. So
right.
I'm not Maori, but I have that name.
Do you think it reflected your exuberance as a child?
You know, it's funny. I had this discussion with another singer a few months ago, actually, about what, you know, when your parents choose your name, whether there's some sort of futuristic, fatalistic sense of it having an impact on what your life might be. Like, who knows? It's a far-reaching question, but I don't know. There's maybe something to it. Who knows? You know what your parents see in you when you're first born. So maybe I look like I might be a bit fiery in my latter years.
Yeah. You said, talking about your youth, you started singing at school at Christ's College in Christchurch. Was there someone specifically who singled you out as a particular singing talent, or was it just a recognised fact by everybody around you?
Look, you know, initially when I first went to the school, I didn't audition for the choir or the chapel choir as we had then.
Yeah.
And it was just through music classes. You know, we had compulsory music classes, like I think most early secondary schools do. A gentleman by the name of Bob Field Dodgson was my singing, is a fabulous name, was my singing teacher.
Did you say Bob Field?
Master.
Did you say Field?
Bob Field is Field
well,
you Dodgson.
Were, I thought I knew you from somewhere.
Well, you could well be related, I don't know. But he's, he always nurtured me, and he actually got me to audition for the New Zealand Youth Choir, you know, which is something I never would have done had it not been for him. And that I sort of got into that, and which was, you know, I had five wonderful years being part of a choir, which I guess it's, you know, it's like the Gondwana choirs here, I guess, for the youth, the more senior one. But he did say to my mum, as I was leaving school on my last day, he said, you know, one day I think your boy, you know, Teddy could make a career out of music if he wanted to. Well, I didn't take any notice of it at the time.
No,
but there you go.
No, in fact, you didn't take notice of it. And what on earth did you do turning down a two-year music scholarship in London in favour of doing a commerce degree in what? In accounting.
Well, look, it's a little bit upside down. I mean, I'd done a commerce degree. I went to the Guildhall and did a diploma. And then I was offered a two-year scholarship in the opera course. But yes, you're right, I did turn that down, and I came back to New Zealand and took up my career in the commerce world for about 7 years.
Yes, you actually practiced accounting after you qualified. How exciting did you find debits and credits versus a concurrent association with the Canterbury Opera and Opera Australia and every other prestigious opera company?
Look, you know what? I don't want to offend any accountants out there, because I actually had my life as an accountant. You know, I actually really enjoyed my life in at that time. It was just, you know, I had the opportunity. I was singing with Canterbury Opera, you're right, and I had the opportunity through a series of events. I was offered a role with Opera Australia, and at that point I had to make a decision as to whether I was going to, you know, resign from my position in Christchurch and take up the risk, and there really wasn't an option. You know, it was. I always thought that if I, you know, I did one role in an amazing opera house like the Sydney Opera House, then whatever happened beyond that, you know, really didn't matter. I'd given it a crack, and it would have been an amazing experience regardless of how it turned out.
Yes, but think what you could have done if you were an accountant, Teddy.
Oh, well, Look, there are all sorts of benefits. Who knows where I might have been if I was an accountant. But look, no, to all those accountants out there, I love you all. I had a great life as an accountant, and they do a very worthy task for everyone.
Okay. Well, to be honest, I'm glad you chose the path you did. You've performed at nearly every prestigious opera venue with every prestigious opera company around the world. That includes the Metropolitan Opera, Opera Australia, as we've discussed, San Francisco Opera, Washington National Opera, Hamburg State Opera, Bavarian. I ran out of paper at that stage. Do you have a standout recollection from any one of them?
Oh, that's a really hard question, Alan. Look, they were all in their own way. I mean, the common answer is wherever you are at the time is the greatest place to be at, and at the moment, because you're always, you know, your next job is only a result of your previous one, really. Mm. But I would have to say, look, if I had to pick a couple, and, you know, perhaps not where one might expect me to pick, but my first job at Opera Australia, I have to say, because that sort of launched me and took me out of New Zealand and was, my first opportunity. So, that was, and I was being conducted by Richard Bonning, revered Australian conductor, and I was in a world that I didn't know anything of, and, you know, through them, they sort of guided me through. And then, I'd have to say, my first gig at San Francisco Opera was pretty amazing. I did an opera called Dead Man Walking there, which was a modern opera. And, I got the role through, a series of very lucky events. They wanted someone completely unknown, which was me. that's how they auditioned me, and they wanted someone who the public wouldn't know anything about, and I happened to get the job.
Well, the quality of singer that you are, you've obviously developed a certain style and approach to classical works, and you've performed you've performed squillions of them all sorts of strange languages. But you've also recorded nursery rhymes. How different is it singing nursery rhymes to world classics?
Oh, actually, it's much more difficult, can I say. When they asked me to sing nursery rhymes, I thought, are they asking the right person? Do they really want a big old bass, a big bass voice or bass baritone voice singing nursery rhymes? But, they were really written, composed by an Australian composer, actually.
Do you have a favourite one, Teddy?
The favourite, the Owl and the Pussycat Went to Sea in a Beautiful Pea Green Boat, actually. Oh. It's actually, if you listen to the album, it's actually really quite charming.
I don't have that one on hand, but I do have you seen The Muffin Man?
Oh, my goodness, that's my niece's favourite one. They used to rib me about that.
Have a listen. See if it brings back memories.
I know what it's going to sound like.
This is you singing.
I know it's me. It's highly embarrassing.
The Muffin Man who lives in Drury Lane. Yes, we've seen the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man. Yes, we've seen the Muffin Man that lives in Drury Lane.
Well, it does go on.
I'm worried your listeners may have turned off by now. I'm wondering what an radio.
I've got plenty more. You've collaborated.
To be fair, that album was actually, there were a lot of great songs on the album and some really amazing old nursery rhymes because, in fact, nursery rhymes were originally, often were old songs which were old drinking songs which were made up in the old pubs in England or wherever they might have been or in France, wherever it was. And then they were transferred and taken off and sung to the children.
Talking of which, you've collaborated with tons of world-famous orchestras and ensembles and singers, but I couldn't find any collaboration with either Bluey or the Wiggles.
No. That's steered clear of me, which is probably a wise thing. The Wiggles. I mean, the Wiggles is an Australian, international, iconic group, I'd say you'd have to be Australian, first and foremost, to be a part of that group.
Well, we've adopted you. You qualify.
They are a very fine bunch of performers and musicians, I have to say. So, probably a little bit out of my league. So.
A little bit out of your league, indeed. if I can manage an association between you and the Wiggles, will you promise me some sort of swatter's fee?
Look, sure, but I have no doubt they don't need me to enhance their group, which is already extraordinarily wonderful.
It's extraordinarily wonderful indeed. Last year, in fact, you were appointed to the University of Adelaide's Elder Conservatory of Music in a teaching and mentoring role. Now, what concerns me, Teddy, is that the use of the word elder, because you're ageless. How can you be part of an elder conservatory?
Look, you know what, Alan? I'd have to say, you know, I'm 60 next year, which is, to me, feels rather extraordinary. Mm. And to think, you know, because the day I first walked into Australia seems like, literally, it seems as, you know, as clear as it was yesterday. Mm. And, you know, the old saying that time passes quickly. But, you know, it's actually, it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. Mm. You know, I'm still getting the chance to perform, but I'm there, you know, actually as head of the classical voice course now.
Right.
And I get to, you know, work with and mentor and help the next generation, hopefully, in some way, or give some, you know, hopefully the tips I give are useful advice for the next generation who are coming through, who are going to keep the classical genre going. And I always remember the mentors I had when I was younger, growing up in New Zealand, especially when I first started performing. I always remembered they would go out of their way to help me get started or go the extra mile for no benefit to themselves other than just wanting to help a young person that was talented. And I've never forgotten that, and I've always, it's a privilege to be able to help these, you know, young students that are now starting out. And, you know, you feel a great responsibility to actually nurturing them and helping them reach their dreams if that's the path they want to go down. So yeah. I'm very fortunate.
Let's talk about this Thursday, the 17th, Teddy, 7 p.m. in the Concert yep. Hall of the Sydney yep. Opera House. Are you looking forward to that?
Oh, very much so. Look, I always have a bit of trepidation these days. And, you yeah. know, strangely, when I was young, I used to just stand up there and feel invincible. But these days, I, you know, as once again, an elder gentleman or an elder person, that it's, I think about it a lot more. But, you know, I used to perform this when I was in my 20s.
What, the St. Matthew Passion?
The St. Matthew Passion, yeah. Mm. I must have done my first one when I was in my late 20s in Christchurch at the cathedral there.
Mm.
And, you know, to still be able to do it at the age I'm at now, you know, I see it in a completely different light, and what I bring to it is different to what, you know, obviously brought to it as a young performer.
Yeah.
But, you know, I get the, you know, it's a privilege once again to be able to perform with the Sydney Philharmonia Choirs and the Australian Romantic and Classical Orchestra, who are amazing.
Yes, indeed. It's a powerful work in any case. And I just want my audience to know that Felix Mendelssohn, who was 20 years old at the time, rewrote it, the original Bach work.
Yeah.
I wonder why he might have done that.
Well, I think it was, when I did a bit of reading about it, but I think it was to, in the 1800s, to bring it more in line with, like, the romantic feel of music. Even back then, they were trying to find ways of bringing music that was, say, written 100 years prior
yep.
into a time that appealed to the audiences of the time so that it wasn't lost. And, you know, we're still doing that today with all sorts of, you know, with opera. We try and create it in a way or present it in a way that might appeals more to the audiences we have today as to what it might have been first performed back in the 1700s, 1800s. So
right.
I think that's why it really was. And it's got a much more, sort of, it's a much fuller, more orchestral score than what it was under Bach.
Yeah, yeah. The performance will be in historically informed 19th century period instruments and conducted by renowned choral conductor, Sydney Philharmonia Choir's Associate Music Director, Elizabeth Scott. How different will that experience be from the one we're listening to now, which in fact is you together with Anthony Walker, with whom you've performed a number of times before?
Yes. Well, look, I don't think it'll be too much different. That was the one with Anthony Walker. Look, I think that might have been in baroque pitch too, actually, when I look back on it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is sort of in between what they call baroque pitch and, you know, the more modern classical pitch.
Right.
But so it's just a little bit, so it's set a little bit lower, which is, I'm very grateful for, I might add. I'm better on the lower end of my voice than I am the top end of my voice these days. But yeah, so as I say, I mean, I was singing the arias back then. So the Christos, the role that I'm playing, doesn't sing the arias. He sings more of the role of Christ. But yeah, look, I still see it differently. You know, back in the day, I used to, as a young singer, you know, you had the advantage, I guess, of youth and freshness and beauty of voice. And as you get older, you have a different texture and character to your voice, but you bring a different level of, I guess, gravitas and hopefully a bit of wisdom and life experience to it. So it's probably, I don't want to say, yeah, it's probably not as, as, you know, it doesn't have the beauty of the younger voice, but maybe it has something else.
You're going to be in the company of some pretty distinguished soloists, though, too, aren't you? Penelope Mills, Emily Edmonds, Andrew O'Connor.
Of a much younger generation than me, I might add, and
Andrew Goodwin as well.
Andrew Goodwin, who's playing the evangelist, who was a colleague of mine for many, many years, and is absolutely, you know, the part was written for him. Really, it sounds like it was. He sings it with most, you know, wonderful beauty and bomb. So, well, it's fabulous.
It's an extraordinarily notable lineup. It's on Thursday the 17th. That's this Thursday coming at 7 p.m. in the Concert Hall of the Sydney Opera House. Tickets and bookings, Teddy? Where are they?
Oh, look, tickets and bookings. You know, you've caught me out there.
Okay, well, I'll give you a hand. It's at sydneyphilharmonia.com.au. And my suggestion is that people might need to get there pretty quickly. Because once the name Teddy Tahu Rhodes is out there, then those tickets are going to be swept up.
That's very kind of you, Alan. Look, there's way more. I'm a little cog and a wonderful, wonderful wheel of, you know, fabulous musicians and artists.
Pretty worthwhile cog, if you ask me, Teddy. I've got to ask you something else. While we're listening in the background to a little bit of that St. Matthew Passion, do you sing in the bathroom?
You know, I hardly ever sing at home.
Oh,
I don't know
really?
What it is. I think I have a fear of being a nuisance to anyone, you know, in the vicinity of me. And I used to sing at home in Christchurch all the time at my house. And I had a big detached house and quite a big garden around it. And my neighbours would often comment that they could hear me singing to all hours of the night, because I would. I'd practice until, because I was so enthusiastic, you know, and I didn't even have a job back then. and I would sing, get in with Mysterio and sing. So, no, I don't. I really don't. Not a word of a lie to that.
Extraordinary. Well, I'm going to phase out that St. Matthew Passion we're listening to now and ask you whether or not there is any one piece of music that stands out to you that you've played which you would think is extraordinarily memorable. And might I direct your attention to something perhaps by Bizet?
By Bizet. Are you going to say that it might be with a very dear colleague of mine?
Yes, I am.
David Hobson.
Yes, I am.
That was a good guess.
Yeah, you did well.
It's the Pearl Fishers duet from written by Bizet, and David Hobson is a dear, dear friend of mine.
Yeah, and it's ironical that the story of the of that particular thing is two guys falling in love with the same woman, and then deciding to keep their friendship over the woman that they are after.
That's exactly right.
Teddy Tahu Rhodes, thank you so much for joining us here today on Monday Drive and Classical Beats, and have a great performance this coming Thursday.
Thank you very much for having me, Alan. I do appreciate it.
Thank you. soldat, quel étrange ardeur s'allume.
Elle faut nous faire costume.
Ta mère pousse ma main.
Ta mère pousse ma main.
De la gueule, l'amour s'enfoire et nous changeons l'ennemi.
Non, que rien ne nous sépare.
Non,
rien ne nous sépare.
FM, East Side Radio.